You're tuned in to Nerd Overload, your weekly show for video games, movies, TV shows, comics, tech news, and more. Sponsored in part by Creative Foundations, employing individuals with disabilities. Now your hosts, Cody Pinnick, Samantha Cross, Sam Dunham, and Josh Harrison.
Hey, welcome back. It's time for another Nerd Overload, the pop and geek culture show that covers everything from Blackulas to zombies. I'm Josh.
I'm Sam.
I'm Cody.
And I'm Samantha.
We have a great show for you. Thank you for tuning in. Got a bunch of stuff lined up for you, including some news and an interview with Jackie Naiman Jones and Tanya Atomic.
of Manos Returns, the Kickstarter to fund the upcoming sequel to Manos, The Hands of Fate.
Yep, look forward to that. But as always, let's get into some things we've been checking out. I'll just go ahead and go. I've been playing a little bit of the new Street Fighter V. Just came out on Tuesday. And yes, and I'll be honest, I'm not super impressed at this point. It is not a complete game.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, if you like online play, that's great because that's pretty much all that's there. You have online versus mode if you have a couple people here with you to play, and there is probably the weakest story mode I have ever seen in any kind of fighting game ever. There's no like arcade mode where you go through seven fighters. There's nothing like that. Instead, you have for each character is a different specialized like story mode where it has I don't want to say animated cutscenes. They're more like drawings that they've cut out and are moving across the screen.
Oh, it's like a visual novel.
Kind of like a visual novel, interspersed with three single round fights against the AI. That is probably the dumbest like fight AI I've ever played against.
Better or worse than Dong Dong Never Dies AI?
Worse.
Wow.
Oh yeah, no, the AI doesn't know how to do anything. And the story modes for each character takes, I'd say, about 10 minutes, if that. No, actually less than that, now that I'm thinking about it, because the first time my graphic settings were turned up a little too high, so everything was moving in slow motion. But I've gone through the Ken and Ryu ones, and there's one for each of the characters. Ken's took me about 5 minutes. Ryu's, like I said, took a little longer because I had the graphics turned up too high.
How many characters are there?
There are 12, I think. 12 or 14, something like that.
Wow, that's not a lot.
That's really not. The story itself is kind of compelling, I guess, if you're into the Street Fighter lore. But right now, it's not worth the money. Now, I will say they are going to be rolling out in months down the line. Next month, they're going to be putting in their first DLC character, which you can unlock with in-game credits. You don't have to actually pay for. You get credits every time you fight.
It's called fight money.
Fight money or something like that, yeah. And they're going to be adding in a full story mode that's like all of the different story modes coming together. And it's supposed to be like over an hour of animated, like full 3D animated content. So I guess that's good.
Then they shouldn't have released the game until a month later.
I agree.
Sounds like it's almost like it's like they made you just pay full price for like a demo. And here you go.
Pretty much. Yeah, it's an incomplete game.
It's early access Street Fighter.
Mm-hmm. And if I'll tell you what, if this is all we were getting, it would be a 6.5 or a 7 out of 10. Right now, it's not worth the money. It's not worth it.
Wait on the Street Fighters.
Now, down the road, they are going to be putting out a new DLC character every 2 months for the year, for the season one pass, I guess. And they are going to be adding challenge mode, and they're going to be adding in different things to kind of flesh out the game a little more.
Yeah, stuff that should have been in there from the beginning.
Yeah. Well, it was in there with Street Fighter 4, like the challenge modes and the, arcade mode style. This is basically the mode that you would go to the arcade and play, like two-player mode. And that's it. That's all there is.
I think this might be my advanced age talking, but I remember when games used to come out complete.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow, like, you are old.
Yeah, I know. But like, seriously, it feels like ever since the whole DLC craze thing even started, developers have been getting, I don't want to say lazy is the proper word, but
I don't think it's the developers. I think it's the publisher.
Well, the publisher. Yeah. Yes, I'm sorry. The publisher.
They're leaning too heavy onto the like the evergreen style of like gameplay, where instead of putting everything out at once and having the game ready to go, they drip feed it to the players so that to kind of cause make them come back and play more often.
And so some games that'll work for
Splatoon.
Like Splatoon, it worked for Splatoon.
Mm-hmm.
But Splatoon still had a lot of content.
Not really.
Not
from the start. Not really. It had like four maps,
mm-hmm.
and they rotated every like couple hours. So. It was pretty light when it first came out, but they updated it constantly.
Yeah.
Whereas Street Fighter's, what, a month or two?
The first update comes out in the next month, in March, and then 2 months after that it will be the next update, and then they'll start rolling out more stuff as it goes.
Yeah, like Splatoon updated like that week.
Yeah.
I mean, it's regardless, it's stupid.
Yeah,
it feels like it's all just a scam to try to get as much money as you can.
Pretty much,
they're making you pay $60 for a game that, from the way you make it sound, is barely half a game.
Right now, yeah,
you got Battlefronted, man. You got Mead.
Yeah,
you got Star Wars Battlefronted.
I did.
DLC is a great idea that is rarely ever executed correctly.
Uh huh. I agree.
Like this new Fire Emblem that's coming out that's split up into like three different games. That's kind of crappy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to play it. I'll probably buy all the different parts, but I don't like the way they set it up.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a dialogue choice where you choose what side you want to be about five missions in, I guess. And if you choose the other one, it's like, well, buy it. Like right there in the game.
Really?
Like, well, okay, you got to buy the other half.
So then why give you the choice?
I don't know. Well, you got to start with one.
Oh, yeah. That's ridiculous.
It's killing me. Mm-hmm. It's stupid. It really, really is. I just don't understand why we can't just get a game that we can just play and not have to worry about all this
stuff. That Fire Emblem depends on how long each campaign is. If they're really long, then I would understand.
Right.
It's frustrating. But also, you know, I've got, you know, stacks and stacks and stacks of, like, you know, JRPGs from, like, the 90s and early 2000s that were, like, ready to roll right then with hours and hours and hours and hours of content.
Well, like, you used to didn't have to unlock stuff in games, too. Mm-hmm.
Or, if you did, it was optional, and it rewarded you for hard work.
Yeah, like, you got everything you paid for right out. Like Mario Kart, mm-hmm. you got all the characters right there. Not all the tracks, all but one.
Yeah.
Cup. But it was all right there. Like, you didn't have to unlock any characters. And, I mean, sometimes that progression is good to keep you playing, but a lot of times I think they just lock stuff behind walls for no good reason.
Well, again, it's that making you come back and play more often and, you know, trying to make it more evergreen, I guess.
But if they just make a good game, then they don't have to resort to those gimmicks.
Exactly. Well, there you go. But really, that's all I've had time to check out. It's really been kind of a light week for me.
Yeah, so. I've had a lot of homework I've been doing, but yeah. I did manage to put in a little bit of time with a cool golf game.
Oh, yeah?
What is it? Vertiguous Golf, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
It's a steampunk dystopian mini golf game played from the first person perspective. It's in a Humble Bundle that's out now. You can get it for like, I think, $1. No, it's like $5.
Okay.
And you get four copies. But it's like a little mini golf game that takes place in the sky, and it's steampunk themed. It actually has a story mode.
Really?
With a pretty interesting story about there's these two different cities, and one is the slummy one mm-hmm. called, I think, Scudsboro, that's in the ground and it's all polluted. And the other one's New London, and it's up in the sky where people play sky golf.
Oh, jeez.
And everything's perfect. And it's about the two cities, you know, fighting, and there's freedom fighters, and like it's all spelled out through audio logs that you get by running over these vinyl records on the golf course.
Mm-hmm.
Like the story mode plays different than regular golf. You just have to hit it to these different records along the different courses that unfold the story.
Okay.
And the story is actually pretty interesting, and it even changes like it doesn't have a traditional main menu. It has like a street with two buildings you can go into in mm-hmm. first person, and it actually changes that environment as you move through the story.
Oh, wow.
It's a lot going on for a actually pretty solid mini golf game, too.
Excellent. That sounds really cool.
And you have, like, you can rewind time if you have the fuel for it. So if you mess up a shot, you can rewind
mulligan.
Time and, yeah, have a mulligan, basically.
Nice.
You have a flying mechanical...
Caddy?
No, a hummingbird.
Oh, okay.
That you can drive to look around the course.
Oh, right.
It's a really neat game.
Huh. Excellent.
It has online multiplayer, too, and apparently you can, like, get items to mess with the other player while they're shooting and stuff.
Oh, excellent. Man. I think I know who we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really cool game, and you can get it for real cheap on Humble Bundle.
Cool. Or you can be friends with you, Cody, and send out, you know, a couple copies of that. That was great. Thank you, buddy.
No problem. There's some cool... free-to-play MMO paid content in that Humble Bundle, too. You get, like, a starter pack for Wildstar.
Oh, cool.
You get pirate gear for Neverwinter, which is pretty cool.
Nice, nice.
It's a cool... Check out that Humble Bundle. It's pretty sweet.
Yeah. Sounds good.
How much longer does that Humble Bundle have?
I think it just started.
It just started? So, like, is it the week one?
I think it's just regular Humble Bundle, so it might be longer than a week.
Well, right on. Excellent.
So I thought you'd be interested in pirate gear for Neverwinter.
I have Neverwinter. I haven't played it in probably months.
Well, now that you can be a pirate, you're probably going to jump right back in. Yeah.
I played it when it came out, and I really liked it, and I just kind of forgot about it. It's actually kind of action-y and fun. I would recommend Neverwinter if you're in the mood for an MMO.
Oh, very cool.
Also, Wildstar is good.
Yeah. I remember when Neverwinter rolled out because I was playing Champions, which was another... one of their games, Cryptic's games, and they were doing a lot of, like, test stuff. They would, like, put, like, weird superhero skins on top of, like, things they were testing for Neverwinter to kind of, like, soft, like, test it with, like, an established MMO community. So I remember a lot of that. That's when Champions got, like, car, like vehicles and stuff like that.
Like, why am I fighting kobolds?
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Did we watch anything? Interesting? No. I watched a couple episodes of Once Upon a Time.
Oh. That's always fun.
Watch. Yeah. We're in the fifth season now.
Oh, cool.
Where everything's backwards and everything is extra stupid. It's funny because we always watch it like at night before we go to sleep. And you're like, put something stupid on. And like that's the go-to, to just put something stupid on to fall asleep during.
So one of my stupid collectible money wasting hobbies is a tabletop game called HeroClix.
Yeah,
and I know I've probably talked about it before.
I think so.
But Toy Fair happened, and for the most part, I was mostly following just Funko Pops.
Sure,
to collect those stupid things, and HeroClix. Well, finally got some pictures of the Ninja Turtle HeroClix.
Okay,
which is probably the only set I've been super excited about for a long time.
Yeah,
they're pulling. Like, there are multiple turtles.
Okay.
Like, from all over the different franchise, like, different versions of the franchise.
Oh, right on.
Like, there's a set of four that are painted black and white.
Oh, okay, so the original bandanas. Eastman and Laird?
Yeah.
Yeah, right on.
And there's a Shredder that goes with them, and I think maybe a Casey Jones.
Okay, cool, cool.
There's some of the Nickelodeon ones.
Okay, I don't like those.
That style.
Yeah.
Oh, like the 2000 turtles?
Yeah. No. The current one.
Oh, the current one. CGI I don't mind one. The current CGI
I don't mind it either. I think the story is actually pretty good in that series.
Mm.
The 2000 animated series was good, too. Until that last season where they went...
To the future?
To the future, yeah.
That was a weird...
That was dumb.
Yeah, it was a weird
future
one.
Future turtles.
Yeah. But anyway, I finally started to get to see pictures of it, and it made me even more excited.
Yeah.
And then they posted a picture, and I think they're going to be convention exclusives that you can purchase. And one of them is a vehicle that is the Turtles van from the 80s cartoon.
Excellent.
Nice.
There was also a Punisher van that comes with Punisher and a whole bunch of like weapon 3D object things to use.
Sure.
There was the 66 Batman
on
a
surfboard.
You showed
me this one. Yeah, I'm excited for that.
With his board shorts.
Yeah, with his board shorts.
I feel like the Punisher's van would be really creepy looking. Is it creepy looking?
Not really. It's pretty actually really basic looking.
For some reason, I feel like the Punisher would drive like a molesty van.
Oh, it does kind of look like that. It does kind of look like that. I mean, if I bought it, I'd almost be tempted to paint Free Candy on the side of it.
God. Oh boy.
Frank Castle's candy van.
I don't know why I feel like he would drive a molesty van.
Well, it could be worse. He could be the ice cream man from Spawn. But anyway. There was also a couple. There was a Kingdom Come Hawkman figure because the current DC set, all their really super rare figures are Kingdom Come based. Mm-hmm. And Cosmic Daredevil. Uh-huh. Once in a while, they'll put out a character that has the power cosmic. And they've done Spider-Man, Hulk, X-23, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I'm mostly just excited for the Ninja Turtles and the Batman 66. Because
yeah.
I need more stupid plastic crack that's going to collect dust in my house.
Hey, you and me both, man. Looking around this office, I got to... Yeah.
How can Daredevil get around in space? He's blind and there's nothing for... Like, there's no...
I'm sure the power cosmic gives him some kind of
there's
ability.
There's no feels or smells or anything.
In space, no one can hear you, sonar.
I'm just saying space might not be the best place for Daredevil.
Yeah, I agree.
That reminds me, the Netflix released a trailer for the new season of Daredevil.
I saw that. Yeah, it looks really good.
It does look really, really good.
It looks real good.
I guess I need to watch all of Daredevil still.
Yeah,
oh, you need to cut off. You stink.
I still haven't watched all of Jessica Jones either. And
oh, my God,
that.
Dude. You fail at good television.
Oh, you're, come on.
Here you are sitting there watching freaking Once Upon a Crap, and you can't finish Daredevil and Jessica Jones, which are both equally amazing.
Well, I hate to cut this I hate to cut this geek beratement short, but we actually have an interview that we did earlier this week with Jackie Naaman Jones and Tanya Atomic. From Manos, the Hands of Fate. You want to go ahead and roll into that one?
Sure.
All right, hey folks, we're here with Jackie Naaman Jones, the producer of the upcoming movie Manos Returns, and one of the stars of the original Manos, the Hands of Fate, which you might have seen on Mystery Science Theater 3000. And we're also here with Tanya Atomic, the director of Manos Returns. Jackie, Tanya, how are you doing this evening?
Doing great. Doing good.
Well, thank you very much for coming on, by the way. Really appreciate it. Just got a couple of quick questions for you. I'm a huge fan of Manos, the original. You know, I'm a Mystery Science Theater guy and everything. And I just I got to start with a couple of quick questions about that because I'm dying to know. So
I love answering Manos questions. So.
Oh, great. Well, Jackie, you played Debbie, and Debbie, if for folks who haven't seen the movie, she was like the young daughter of the couple that gets trapped at the lodge where, you know, all the weird stuff happens with Torgo and the master and everything. What were some of your experiences while making the film? Were you aware that, you know, you were making a movie at the time, or what did you kind of think, what was going on with all this weird stuff happening around you?
Yeah, well, my dad had been in theater, so I was used to him running lines and the makeup and the costumes, and he was also an artist and did a lot of shows, and so I was used to living with this very interesting bohemian style family in the mid 60s. So nothing really surprised me. And then being out there was just, it was really, and still is, those memories of the greatest summer of my life. Because, I mean, truly, I got to be the only kid out there. I got to stay up all night if I wanted to. I got to be with my dad doing his passion, what he loved the most, which, because I adored him so much, that was my passion too. And so it really was. And I, you know, people say, well, how can you remember so well after so many years? And the truth is, I did remember well, because I've done a lot of interviews and talked to people, and they're kind of bouncing back the same stories that I recall. And I always say that it's like, you know, the best summer or the best birthday party or the best experience of your childhood, you cherish those memories and you nurture them and you hold on to them, so that when you're adult, it's not like they just pop up out of nowhere. You've been holding on to them a long time. And so anyway, that's how it was for me. It really was. It was like the best birthday party, the best vacation, the best everything of my childhood.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well,
that's awesome.
That's excellent. I was curious what you thought when you first saw Torgo. What was that like working with, you know, the guy with the, you know, the prosthetics on his legs and all that?
John Reynolds. Well, he was a he was in the theater too.
Oh, okay.
He'd been in several plays with my dad. He and my dad were actually pretty good friends. They were both method actors and very, very involved. Mm-hmm. And they were also writers, and they did poetry, and you know, just John Reynolds was very depressed. You know, I mean, he had a lot going on.
I'd heard a little bit about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So ultimately, he committed suicide just 1 month before the Monos premiere. But that was just devastating to our family. I mean, because they were friends, and my dad had really reached out and tried to help him in a lot of cases. So we knew him from before, and he actually lived at the time of his death. He lived just less than two blocks from us. So I used to walk by his place all the time, and my dad and I together stopped in to check on him a few times.
Oh, wow!
In that time, so he was just a really sweet guy, and he was actually very, very talented. And, but you know, I like to say that if you watch movies, sometimes there's, talented people that are just put into the wrong place,
yeah.
You know, and there are actors that aren't that great that are, with great directors that pull wonderful things out of them, mm-hmm. You know,
I think he was legitimately really great in Manos, honestly.
He really was very talented. The other thing that you have to understand about Manos is all of these people were theater trained. And this is 1966, so nobody knew anything about film or television. I mean, in 1966, we had three television stations, and they went off at like 11 p.m., so there was no, you know.
Yeah, right.
There was no experience behind this.
I wasn't aware that, you know, he had worked with your dad in prior theater things. I'm really sorry to hear about, you know, his passing and all that. But no, I really do think he probably put in just an amazing performance in Manos. Yeah. He did the best with what he was given, you know.
Yeah, and you know, he was kind of on the decline at that point anyway. So there were some drugs involved and things. I mean, it could have been that he's, I mean, well, for sure, everybody saw the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah.
And, you know, it could have been that he just realized which way this thing was going and decided to play it not so straight.
Yeah. I just want to move ahead forward a little bit in time. You know, Manos, it premiered in, it was in Texas. Am I correct in that? When it was filmed in the original premiere and everything?
Yeah, El Paso, Texas.
El Paso, that's right. And it ran through drive-in theaters for a while and it kind of faded into obscurity, only to have it pop back up in the 90s with Mystery Science Theater. What was it like seeing, you know, this little film that you worked on all those years ago become all of a sudden back in the public mind and arguably one of the best episodes of Mystery Science Theater, one of the most memorable ones, I guess.
Well, like I said, you know, I nurtured those memories, and one of the reasons I cherish them so much is that we never saw Manos after the premiere, and the premiere was so horrible that nobody ever talked about it after that. And so it was kind of my little private thing, and I looked for it for many years once I was a teenager and into an adult. So I'd given up on it long before 1993. And then my dad called me saying that he'd seen it on TV because he's a Mystery Science Theater fan. Mm-hmm. And he was napping and he opened his eyes and there he was. You know? he called me and he told me and I tracked it down and I got a VHS bootleg copy from somebody in the Comedy Central offices, you know, at HBO offices.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it, put it away, and was satisfied. And then all this stuff starts happening, and more stuff starts happening. And I start meeting these most amazing people. And because of this crazy movie, I'm having this incredible journey and experience.
Oh, yeah.
Now that honestly, I say, nobody's made for this but me. I mean, this is incredible.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, was incredible was a couple years ago when what's his name? Ben Solvey, I think is how you pronounce it. He found an original 16 millimeter print of Manos and had the Kickstarter to have it restored.
Oh,
and
it's crazy. Uh-huh. Yeah. That whole story on how it came to exactly the right person, mm-hmm. who wasn't going to just tuck it away somewhere. Somebody who had, you know, the experience and the wherewithal and the love to make this happen. And I have to tell you, I don't know if you've read some of the articles on that, but before that, Mono survived an earthquake, you know, with a lot of other films that were owned by Emerson Film that had Monos were destroyed.
Oh, wow.
Not, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's meant to be.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, wow.
Yeah, Mr. Solvey did an excellent job with the restoration. I own a copy of it, and just amazing what a little bit of cleaning could do. There are things in the background that no one had seen for 50 years, you know? Just a phenomenal job. And he's working on the atomic brain or something brain. Like that now. So, yeah. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I want to jump over to Tanya for just a minute. You've been a director and actress in a number of, you know, lower budget movies and everything. I'm actually one of the things I kind of recognized from your filmography was your part in the 2015 anthology film Hobo with a Trash Can.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was just curious what your history was with Manos, and how did you get involved with the Manos Returns project?
Well, I was first introduced to it through Rachel Jackson, who is the director of the creator, director, writer of Manos, The Hands of Felt,
okay.
The puppet.
Yeah.
So I actually have known her for a long time. We used to work together and we always stayed friends. And she has been actually in a number of my films too, including Plain Devil, which has a really fun role as sort of this nerdy girl in a girl gang. and she introduced me to the movie, and I watched it. I first watched it actually because I was going to go to her show, The Hands of Felt, and I wanted to, you know, kind of get ready and get all the jokes and everything. Mm-hmm. So that's how I first got sort of introduced to it. And the interesting thing is, I remember I was watching the Mystery Science Theater version, and when Jackie's dad, Tom, came on the screen, and there was a couple times where he had some lines and was doing some things, and I was like, I know this movie's like supposed to be like the worst movie, really bad and everything, but he's actually really compelling.
Oh yeah.
And very interesting. Yeah. And I was like, there's things about this movie, you know, like he's got the robe, which is cool, and then this painting, and of course Torgo. And there's all these like things that are interesting about the film, which is funny to me now, because now I know it's all of those things. Most of those things were from Tom and his family created a lot of that stuff. And but anyway, so that's how I was introduced to the film. And then fast forward to a couple of years later, my co-editor on Plain Devil actually was telling me, he's like, hey, are you familiar with this film, Manos, Hands of Fate? And I was like, oh yeah, you know, through Rachel and everything, I know all about it. And he's like, well, I'm actually involved in writing the sequel for it. And, you know, we actually talked about it a couple more times before he was like, you know, we all talked about it and we decided we want you to be the director. And what do you say? And everything. And I was like, you know, are you completely serious? I was like, really? Me? But after, you know, now after looking at all of this and thinking about all this, I understand why they came to me. But at first it was just kind of like, what? But now I'm like, yeah, okay, I understand. I understand where they're, because the tone of the movie, what they want to do and all the people involved completely makes sense. Turns out, you know, that Jackie and Rachel had known each other. I didn't know that at the time, but also I came to the film through Steve, who knows Jackie through another mutual friend, Joe. So we're all connected, interestingly enough. And then
that's like a crazy kind of serendipitous kind of everyone seems to know everybody, and it all kind of fit together perfectly. That's great.
It all came together. Yeah.
Yeah.
I admit
it's the will of Manos.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Gosh. But yeah, that's how I came to be involved in it, and it just feels very natural at this point.
Absolutely.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. Well, you have about, at the time of this recording, you have about 2 weeks left in your Kickstarter, and it looks like it's about 70-75% funded. So it looks very likely that the movie is going to be made. What can fans of the original Manos, as well as folks who are new to, you know, the Hands of Fate, what can they expect from Manos Returns?
Well, I would say that there's going to be, I mean, it is going to have a comedic tone to it. Mm-hmm. Partially, I think that's very clever the way that Steve wrote it. Is he wrote it understanding that fans of Manos, most of them came to it from Mystery Science Theater. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of a fandom and sort of a cult fandom of people who both love it, and some people that love to hate it, and people that love it because it's sort of awkward. And so he wrote the script sort of with an understanding of that, and so he made it mostly comedy, but he also wanted to put, and we all felt this way too, mm-hmm. to keep the characters from the original world of Manos in their original world, mm-hmm. and have that be serious while having the comedy stuff as well. We're gonna see some of the original characters played by the original actors. The sheriff is going to be played by the original sheriff's son.
Okay.
So we're going to have a lot of that thing. The music is going to be done by a couple of the original musicians and the original vocalist. So basically we're trying to involve all as many original people as we can. There's going to be new characters though who encounter the lodge, and so there'll be that new element. It is kind of self referential, so we do reference jokes about the original movie and that kind of thing.
Okay.
So it'll be funny. I think it'll be fun mostly.
Okay.
I think mostly it's going to be fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's how I think of it too. Is I think of it as a film that we're making to recognize some of the original people that have never had any recognition, like the musicians that were never credited in the first place. Mm-hmm. And as many people who follow Manos know, that the original cast and crew never got paid or anything for Manos. And so that's part of what we're doing too, is giving back to them and creating a fan film that's just a whole lot of fun.
Well, that's great. I mean, it sounds like the movie's going in just the right direction, you know, just the way the way Manos should be taken, I suppose. You know, it's, you know, staying true to the original, but adding a little bit of levity and kind of, you know, like you said, the self-referential. That sounds great. And, And I understand your dad is even coming back for it. He played the master. I don't know if we mentioned earlier So he's actually going to be coming back for it as well. That's amazing. That's excellent.
Yeah, we're getting him in there. And I just want to say real quickly that we're not following the original stylistically, or, we have no intention of making a bad movie. Mm-hmm. It's tongue in cheek, but some people are misunderstanding that to mean that we're going to do something to make it like a bad movie, and we're not, you know, we're not doing a shark.
Yeah. We're not dubbing or doing jump cuts or anything,
or anything like that. We're going to make the best movie we can. We have Tanya and Steve and Joe and myself, and we've all been self-employed for a long time. We're very resourceful, and these people have won awards with no budget at all. And so this isn't a huge budget we're looking at, but it's enough to make a movie that we can all be really proud of.
I know I can't wait to see Manos Returns. I'm really looking forward to it. You have my money, of course. So yeah. So I think we're getting pretty close to time here, but before we let you go, I'll give you a minute to kind of plug whatever you'd like to for our listeners.
All right. Well, for myself, the Kickstarter, that's our focus right now, is getting this funded so that we can we can get going. So monosreturns.com will take you there. And then for myself, I just completed writing a book called Growing Up with Monos, The Hands of Fate. And it's, I did a ton of research, 16 months of research, finding people and talking to people and backgrounds. And it's a good story. Even if you don't know Monos, honestly, it's a good story. And it'll be out probably next month.
Oh, wow. Excellent.
And that's debbiesmonos.com.
As for me, you can find out everything on my website, TanyaAtomic.com. It's TONJIA is how you spell Tanya, so it's TanyaAtomic.com. And all my old films are on there. If you're curious, Plain Devil with Rachel Jackson is also on there. You can also find that on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Hobo with a Trash Can. Hobo with a Trash Can, I think you can just Google that. It's on a couple online platforms where you can rent it on VOD. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course our Kickstarter, which is going and has amazing perks I'm really excited about. So check it out.
Well, great. Well, hey, Jackie Naiman Jones, Tanya Atomic, thank you again for coming on with us. And good luck with the Kickstarter. I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, looking forward to
Manus. Fantastic. Yeah.
Thank you. Just keep spreading the word.
Thank you.
Nerd Overload is sponsored in part by Creative Foundations.
Hi, my name is Robert.
Hi, my name is Amber.
Hi, my name is Jessica.
I'm Jimmy, and I work at Creative Foundations,
the store that employs people with developmental disabilities.
We have four locations:
Delaware, Mount Vernon, Marysville, and Urbana.
Our website is creativefoundations.org.
Find us on Facebook.
Hey, we're back. That was Careless Whisper by Wham. We played that because of Deadpool.
It was featured in the major motion picture film Deadpool.
Yes.
I don't think I've heard of it.
Now, that's one thing that we all had a chance to check out this week.
Yes, and because it needed to.
Oh, man. Yes. And it was great.
Oh, yeah. It was fantastic. I was skeptical going into it because I was afraid that he was going to get annoying after 20 minutes. But they did it. They made it work.
Yeah, they spaced it out pretty well. Yeah. And yeah, it was like 25% action movie, 75% comedy, I think. And yeah, it was like the perfect balance.
Yeah, and like the movie wasn't very long at all, like in the scope of movies. It was only like an hour and 49 minutes long.
And a really simple plot, too.
Yeah. And I felt like something was going on pretty much all the time.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't really like a dull moment. There was either like some kind of gag going on or just something.
Yeah. And I mean, they gave the character enough pathos,
mm-hmm,
that made you kind of feel bad for him at one point. Then you start laughing at him again.
Yeah.
Well, they made him a believable person, kind of. Like, mm-hmm, like he was less like this wacky, nutty Bugs Bunny character and more like just kind of that guy that doesn't know when to shut up.
Yeah, just believable enough of a cartoon character for him to really work, I think.
Yeah.
And honestly, I was worried that like they were going to like overdo it on the fourth wall breaking bit.
Yeah.
But I think it was done enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was any more than that and it would have fallen flat for sure.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. But I need to see it again so bad.
I mean, this movie would be very, very easy for him to mess it up. Like, and super easy, and yeah, they managed to do it.
Yeah, I know.
Like, I feel like it's seriously on the shelf of very few movies that actually did justice to its source material.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't pass that around lightly.
It was probably better than a lot of Deadpool comics are, honestly.
Modern day Deadpool comics, yeah.
Yeah, it depends.
That's what I mean, like, comparing the whole milieu of Deadpool comics, like...
I mean, yeah, there are, like, 250 issues of Deadpool.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, everyone in the movie really did a great job. I will say the guy who played Ajax, or Francis, he was a little weak, thinking back on it, but...
I think he was supposed to be.
He was supposed to be.
It was a bad character.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't... Every superhero movie has a crap villain. There hasn't been a superhero movie with a good villain yet, probably.
Loki?
I like Loki.
Okay, yeah, Loki, but...
Ultron? Yeah, Ultron no, was...
Ultron sucks.
I don't know. I like James Spader.
I hate James Spader. And he just kind of walked around and James Spadered it the whole time.
Just like, spadered all over that movie.
All over that robot suit.
But no, I mean, every bit of Deadpool was great.
He was about on par with any comic book movie villain.
Yeah. And you know what? The getting the villain aspect of Deadpool really wasn't the point.
No, it really wasn't. But the movie is pretty much all about Deadpool.
Yeah, look at this clown go.
Yeah,
go
clown, pretty much. Go.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Did we want to get into spoiler territory? Or?
Well, I mean...
Yeah, there's not a whole lot to spoil.
There's really not. I mean...
not any big reveals or anything.
Yeah, you can pretty much guess how it's going to go for the first 2 minutes of the movie. It's not... The plot is minimal at best.
Yeah, like, and you can't really spoil jokes. You just don't say the punchline.
Yeah.
Don't
go into Deadpool looking for an engrossing plot line, because you're not going to get that. But
well, I knew
the
I wasn't going to get that.
Jokes are great.
Yeah, but I don't think you'd want an engrossing plot line in Deadpool.
Yeah, because it would get in the way of the jokes.
Yeah, no, exactly.
The opening, I was losing it from the get-go with the opening credits.
Oh, the opening credits
are
fantastic.
with the fake credits there.
Yeah.
Nobody's actual name is given in the entire opening credits.
Yeah, it's like a CGI monstrosity.
Yeah, a completely CGI character. God's favorite idiot.
Yeah, I love that one. God's favorite idiot.
A hot chick.
Yeah.
Colossus was the best. Was the best character in the film.
He stole just about every scene he was
in. He really was. He chewed it up.
Yeah.
Like that bowl of cereal. Oh, man, when Deadpool made the joke about, oh, it's a big house. There's only two of you there. It's like almost like the studio couldn't afford more X-Men.
Yeah.
Oh. The fact that he called Professor X a Heaven's Gate looking guy.
Yeah.
Yep, that was good.
Oh, there's so many good jokes in that movie. It's ridiculous. Seriously, it's a super quotable movie, and that does all kinds of things for me. Oh.
Gross.
Yeah.
Not quite. Not like that. I'm not putting on my Crocs.
Oh, God. No, everything was great. You know, Gina Carano did a good job as the heavy...
as Punch Lady.
Punch Lady, yeah.
Oh, Angel Dust.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
They should have just called less, Punch Lady.
less angry Rosie O'Donnell.
Yeah. You know, they pulled Negasonic Teenage
Warhead.
Yeah, they pulled her out of obscurity.
She was really cool.
Yeah.
Like everybody I talked to at work was like, who is that? And I was like, well,
she popped up in three panels of Grant Morrison's run and was killed off like in one scene.
I also love the fact that she had the yellow and blue X-Men suit.
Yeah, that was a good touch.
I was super excited about that.
Yeah.
I kind of wish Colossus would have had one. Actually, the terrible thing is, I think that Colossus looked better than the Colossus from, like, X-Men 2.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he absolutely did.
He looked like Colossus.
Looked and sounded.
Now...
Yeah, they gave him that, like, cartoonish Russian accent. It was great.
You will come. You will join X-Men.
How about no? Oh my God! When Deadpool's punching him and basically pulling up Monty Python in the
Black Knight. Like, yeah. He's got his two broken wrists flopping around.
He said something about a T-Rex because his arms are flopping.
Yeah, he's like, all the other dinosaurs fear the T-Rex. And then he kicks him and breaks his leg. And he goes, Hey, you ever hear the one about the one-legged guy in the ass-kicking contest?
Oh, man. Yeah. Hey, kids, remember 127 hours?
Spoilers!
It's in his hand. Oh, I love
it. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Sorry I bled all over your garbage. Oh, man. I read something where some lady apparently took her 9-year-old to Deadpool and had to leave like 10 minutes in.
Well, it's an R-rated film.
Yeah and she and somebody online was like, oh man, too bad there wasn't some kind of warning or something. You know, you could have known ahead of time.
Yeah.
And so she's like, yeah, I know, right? And she goes, yeah, maybe, you know, that R rating. And it was like, it wasn't just like an R either. It was like a hard R.
I didn't
R.
think it was that hard of an R.
I don't know. They really threw around that the F-bomb.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's really not that.
Well, like, I honestly think that it could have been PG-13 and it still would have been good.
Yeah, but the R That really kind of
it let him do some really fun stuff.
I mean, it made
stuff.
It better that it was mm-hmm. R, but it still would have been a great movie, even if they did have to cut it down to
PG-13. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Stan Lee's cameo. Now I get why it was his favorite.
Yeah.
The best. Don't want to spoil it, but it was the best.
That one was pretty good. Mm-hmm. Weasel was... I liked Weasel a lot more than I actually thought I was going to.
T.J. Miller's good in everything.
He's always good. He's hilarious.
Yeah.
He's like an actual funny...
comedian.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Actor.
No, I was going to compare him to someone.
Human being.
Dickie Roberts.
What?
David Spade?
Yes, thank you. David Spade.
What? David Spade isn't funny.
I said he said a funny David Spade.
I don't get your comparison.
I just don't think David Spade's that funny. By himself.
Well, why are we talking about David Spade?
I'm comparing him to David Spade.
Why?
But funnier. A funny... I don't know.
I've lost this.
I don't understand why you're...
It's okay. It's all right.
Remind you of him?
I don't want him.
No. Does he remind you of him?
Yes. Oh. But funny.
God, okay. Jeez.
Just cut all that out.
No, I can't...
He doesn't. I just don't see how he reminds you of David Spade.
I don't know. It's just something about him. I don't know.
Oh, whatever. Anyway, we're not talking about David Spade. We're talking about Deadpool.
What if Deadpool was played by David Spade? That'd be a terrible movie.
Oh, God.
That would be an awful
movie. Can you imagine that?
Oh, man.
Chris Farley as Colossus.
all those little... During the opening credits when like the whole car crash is like in stop mode or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And all the little... references floating around.
Oh, yeah.
Like the picture of the Green Lantern.
There were a couple of digs on Green Lantern. They actually mentioned Batman and Robin at one point
in
the
movie. They did.
I don't know how they got away with
it. Not only that, but when the one guy is smashing Deadpool's head into the console of that car
mm-hmm.
and the radio station keeps changing, they do play the 66 scene change music for like a second.
Yeah.
The <do-do-do-do-do>.
Oh, the action was really good.
It really was. I was worried that it was going to be a little too cartoony, like action-wise,
mm-hmm.
but I think they balanced it out well enough.
Yeah. And I like how the there was only like two major like action scenes, two or three, but that first one was split up into like three parts because he would flash back
during the fight scene. Jumping back and forth, yeah.
So it's like one if you put it together, one continuous fight scene, but it was chopped up into like little bite-sized chunks. I liked that a lot.
So another thing is, that if you think about it, there wasn't a whole lot of set pieces. They didn't go a whole lot of places.
No. The bridge.
The bar.
Blind
Deadpool's Al's apartment.
Yeah. Blind Al's apartment. And that tanker or whatever they were on at the end.
Yeah.
Which, I can't really...
That was a helicarrier.
It was?
That was
really?
A helicarrier.
Oh, okay. See, I didn't...
I think that was kind of just a... Kind of a ha-ha... MCU...
I couldn't even tell.
Yeah, that was a helicarrier.
I thought it was just a tanker.
Yeah, it was a helicarrier.
No, whatever. But no, it was really good.
When Deadpool gets stabbed in the brain by that knife and he starts hallucinating.
Start seeing cartoons. Yeah, that was great. You know, Monica Baccarin as...
Copycat?
Well, she wasn't copycat in this, but...
That's who she's supposed to be.
You know, I wish she had a little more to do in the movie.
Yeah.
But again, this movie had a very simple plot, so
I was kind of disappointed that the plot was like, I saved my girlfriend, but I don't know. Yeah.
I think it kind of worked for the movie.
I mean, it worked, but it could have been something more interesting, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she did have some agency. She
did.
She broke out of her little
pod
and stuff, so she wasn't completely helpless.
Yeah. No.
And that they established her as a strong character at the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She wasn't quite damsel in distress. A little bit. She was, but
she was stabbed into a tube. Yeah. And you don't get much more damsel-y than that.
I've seen worse. I also liked how their love story wasn't all gushy and like romantic.
It was a little.
A little. All the jokes during the, their... Montage.
Extended romantic montage.
Yeah, we'll call it that.
Yeah. I think the one that really, really got me was the Lent one.
I was going to say, that was funny.
But like there were two pieces of a jigsaw puzzle. Like, that was pretty gushy.
The weird pieces. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of had to be, you know?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I think
realistic is the word.
But. The IKEA jokes were getting me pretty bad, too.
Oh, yeah.
With Blind Al.
Yeah. And they just kept going, making jokes about the different, like...
Yeah, which are all real IKEA products.
Oh, yeah. Like the fjord and the, you know... I mean, I know fjord's not is like a real thing and not like the name of a dresser from IKEA, but it was like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it is like a Swedish company or something.
Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah.
With all their stupid names of stupid things.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I really want IKEA meatballs now. They're delicious. Have you ever been to IKEA?
No, I haven't.
No, oh, I've never been to IKEA.
Is there an IKEA near here?
Cincinnati.
They just actually, they're building one in Players.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Well, you heard it here first, folks. IKEA coming to Polaris.
Oh, all right, man. Well... It's just a great movie, and it deserves multiple watchings, and I will be buying it on Blu-ray the day it comes out.
Oh, sure. Same here. It was really, really, really good.
Yeah, I was extremely... Oh, and the after-credit scenes.
Yep, don't want to spoil them.
They were the best.
Yep. But no, Deadpool, really good. Go check it out.
Surprisingly good, especially from the studio that made it.
Yeah, and I can't believe it's made as much money as it has for opening weekend.
I know, it's gone it's nuts. Ridiculous.
It broke. It's like all-time highest grossing R-rated film released in February.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a bunch of little subcategories.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the one thing I'm a little concerned about is I hope movie companies don't take the wrong
idea
out of Deadpool, because I could see a lot of people going in to like meetings saying, I want a movie like Deadpool, and they're going to see that and go, okay, breaking the fourth wall, a hard R, you know, a lot of cursing and stuff. And I don't think that was what made Deadpool great. It was the fact that the filmmakers were able to make the film that they wanted to make and had the freedom to do.
Yeah.
The freedom from corporate meddling. Interruption meddling. And meddling. Yeah, I think that was the real triumph of Deadpool.
It proves that people who are passionate about a particular product or project, when they're allowed to make the project they want to make.
Yeah, like I enjoyed this. I don't want to see the Flash movie end up like this. I don't want to see... You know, the next Iron Man be like this, because it wouldn't work for those franchises. This style worked for Deadpool.
I don't want Star-Lord to start talking to me in the theater.
Yeah, exactly. So I just hope that someone at the different movie companies have at least enough sense to go, okay, this worked because we let them do what they wanted.
Yeah.
And not... We just need a hard R comedy.
I hope it just doesn't just... open the floodgates of hard R of superhero movies, because it won't work for every superhero.
I don't want Spider-Man to end up like this.
No.
It won't work for most superheroes,
no,
honestly.
No, there are very few comic franchises I could think that would work with this. I know Todd McFarlane's talking about trying to get a new Spawn movie made and going for an R rating.
You know, that's fine.
Yeah, that would work for Spawn.
Or Spawn.
It'd work for Punisher.
And it would work for Punisher. But it's not going to work for Batman. It's not going to work for Spider-Man, the X-Men.
We've had our Batman, haven't we?
No, we haven't.
No, none of the Dark Knight ones were R?
Oh, no. Wow. Nope. Yeah.
I could see him doing an R Batman, too.
It would have to be like Dark Knight.
I don't think they would ever do an R-rated Batman, because it's too much of a family name.
Yeah, he's too much of a brand.
Too.
It is.
It's not... He's not particularly family friendly.
No, but over the years, you know, there's been so much Batman.
I mean, Batman 66 or Brave and the Bold style. That's
or Batman the Animated series.
Even which then, though did
not
have
particularly
its...
kid friendly.
Not really. Yeah. No, it's got its moments.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
But
I think that's why we love it so much.
Yeah,
but I just don't want it to like studios to go, okay, well, we'll just copy this, and because you know they're just gonna fall on their faces for it.
Sure.
Well, yeah. Deadpool took a lot of...
risk? Chances?
No, now I'm doing it. I can't think of the word. But Deadpool, it took a lot of finesse to work right.
Yeah.
It's not... They didn't have an easy time with it, I'm sure. It's not easy to...
Well, no, when they said they wanted to make it an R rating, the Fox cut, like, all of their budget. Like,
Yeah, then they got that surprise cut right there toward the end of making it, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's why during the final climactic scene, the Deadpool didn't have any guns. He was originally going to have a huge firefight in it, and because they cut out all the funding, they had to write out all of like him using all these guns and stuff. That's why they ended up having it.
Him forget all his stuff in that.
Hey, where's your duffel bag?
Yeah, that's where that scene came from. And they were calling out to why, you know, it wasn't in there. So.
Oh, can I just say I love the cab driver?
That
segment was. Dopinder? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, those were great.
I'm so proud of you.
Well, you know, he's the lead guy in Other Space.
Is he?
Yeah, he's okay. The main captain.
Huh.
He's a very funny guy. And you actually, he's been in the are they AT&T or Verizon commercials where it's like the two tech guys, the one that's, you know.
I don't know.
Okay. I don't think I've ever seen those.
Okay. Yeah, there's a handful of commercials from a few years ago where it's like two tech guys going around. One's, you know, very, very, it's like the engineer and he's, you know, he can talk to people and stuff. And then you have the nerdy super tech guy that makes like weird quips in the background. Well, this guy, the cab driver, was the weird quip guy. Quip guy in the background, yeah.
I feel like they wanted Kumail Nanjiani and he was like, I'm not playing an Indian cab driver.
Yeah, it kind of, yeah, a little bit. Yeah. But anyway, Deadpool, go check it out. It's really good. Go see it in theaters.
Go see it.
It's going to be in theaters for a while, I think. So, yeah.
Oh yeah, they're going to try to get all the milk money they can out of that one.
Oh, and they deserve to, you know?
They really do.
It's great.
Cuz everyone I've talked to so far absolutely loves it.
Mhm. Mhm. All right, well, it looks like we've actually hit our time, so let's go ahead and wrap up here. You've been listening to Nerd Overload. Thank you for tuning in this week. You can find us each and every day over at nerdoverload.com.
Also, if you're on social media and you're on Facebook, like most people are, you can find us over at facebook.com/nerdoverload website.
You can email us with any questions, concerns, comments at staff@nerdoverload.com.
You can tweet us tweets if you use Twitter, a website you can reach at http://twitter.com, where our handle is @nerd_overload.
Thank you for that very detailed description of Twitter.
It's a social media platform where you can share messages with your friends of 140 characters or less.
Perfect. Nailed it. All right. Well, hey, thanks again for tuning in, and we will be back next week.
Peace out.
This show was sponsored in part by Creative Foundations.